I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Time now to answer our geoquiz about American geography. We wanted you to figure out which of the following are not real cities in the U.S. This quiz, by the way, was inspired by the book All America Travels Through America's Arab and Islamic Roots. Okay, here's the list again. Arabia, Nebraska, Baghdad, California, Cairo, or as they say in Illinois, Cairo, Mecca, Indiana, Palestine, Texas. Okay, which of these towns am I making up? Well, Jonathan Curiel, you should know the answer. After all, you wrote the question for All America and you authored the book. So what is the answer?
The answer is that all the towns and cities you mentioned are a part of the United States of America, and they all speak to the connections between the United States of America and Arab and Muslim culture. And they were named at a time when America was expanding, when it was growing, and when Americans looked to the Middle East, but particularly the Arab and Muslim Middle East, for answers and for the names of cities that could inspire them.
Right. And I mean, it's sort of all emblematic of the influence of Arabic and Muslim culture on this country. You said these towns and cities were named some 100 years ago, but can you go further back than that to find kind of the origin of Arabic and Islamic culture on this country?
Yeah, we can go back to the time of Christopher Columbus. This is really when it started. So in other words, the infancy of this country when it wasn't named the United States, when it was just a landmass called America. And Christopher Columbus came famously to this country in 1492. Now, as I note in my book, Christopher Columbus came to this country with very much an influence of Arab and Muslim culture. He spoke Arabized Spanish. He used words like almazeras, which means a scarf worn by Moors. In his very first voyage to America, he and his ships passed the coast of Cuba, and he saw a beautiful hilltop there. And he notes in his journal that the hilltop looked like a beautiful mosque, una hermosa mezquita, he said. Now, this is an example of how Columbus himself admired Muslim architecture, admired Muslim culture. At the latter part of his life, he specifically praised Muslims for aiding his journeys and helping him get to America.
Now, as you point out in your book, Spanish conquest and exploration wasn't the sole source of all Arab and Muslim culture in this country. If you fast forward to the late 1800s and an organization that led to something many Americans have some acquaintance with, you'll see what I mean. Let's let country western singer and jester Ray Stevens sing about it for us.
Here they come down Main Street, drums are playing and sirens are wailing, water roar. Bands are playing, flags are waving. Vanguards and motorcycles go. Clowns are climbing through the crowd and pinching every pretty girl who dared to smile. This is a glorious mess. Everybody wears a fez. The parade stretches out for the miles. It's a typical American phenomenon where all the members have a fine old time. It's the 43rd annual convention of the Grand Mystic Royal Order of the Nobles at the Island Baba Temple of the Shrine.
This mess is called the Grand Mystic Royal Order of the Nobles of the Temple of the Shrine. They also go by Shriners, and as Ray Stevens said, they wear fezes. Jonathan Curiel, was there an actual connection to the Arab world other than the fez?
Oh, yeah, there was very much a connection. If you go back to the origin of the Shriners, it started with about 6 or 7 or 8 Americans who were Masons and who wanted to create an organization that was a little more fun than the Masons, that allowed drinking, that allowed cavorting, that allowed other things. And at that point, they were familiar with the Arab and Muslim world. And in fact, one of the original members spoke Arabic. And so they looked to the Arab and Muslim world for inspiration. Now, it started off in a very silly way, and they did adopt the fez and other examples of Arab and Muslim culture. But it quickly, as far as I'm concerned, dovetailed into a very serious adaptation of this culture. And here's one good example. In around the 1920s, the Shriners adopted hospital care as one of their institutions, one of their principles. And so they gave free hospital care to anyone, regardless of race, creed, or color.
Jonathan, it seems your book responds in a way to a knee-jerk reaction after 9/11 in some small corners of this country where there was hate for the Arab and Muslim world. And All America is a way of showing us that, you know, hey, there's actually a lot of hardwired Arab and Muslim culture right in our own national DNA. Beyond that, though, if ignorant people are going to be ignorant, is there any body of facts large enough to change their minds about the cultural makeup of this country?
Yeah, sure there are. I mean, my book is a way of trying to unveil the music, unveil the literature that shows the connections. This book is about cultural overlapping that's taken place for 500 years. And a good example of that, for example, is Elvis Presley and his love of Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. And now Khalil Gibran is a Lebanese-American poet who died in the 1900s. But, you know, his literature lived on, and it lived on to the point of influencing Elvis Presley for a lot of his life.
Now, speaking of music, you write several compelling sections about the nature of American music and how much it relies on first West African sounds, and if you go back before that, North Africa and the Middle East. Before we talk about that, let's first listen to a bit of Billie Holiday.
All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you?
Billie Holiday there with Eddie Haywood and his orchestra and the incomparable Lester Young on tenor sax singing All of Me. Jonathan Curiel, what does this song have to do with Arab music?
Well, it has to do in this way. Billie Holiday comes out of a long tradition of jazz and blues music. Out of those traditions have origins in the Arab and Muslim world, and they originated this way. In the 1600s, starting in the 1600s, this country forced African slaves to come to the United States of America. Many of these slaves, upwards of 20%, were Muslim. Now, let's talk about the call to prayer. The call to prayer, for those who know it, is the recitation that is done from mosques that calls people to the mosques, telling them that this is the time to pray.
And as long as you're mentioning the call to prayer, let's just show people what we mean, because I think it might help actually understand what you're about to say. This is actually a Quran recitation from Egypt. All right, a Quranic recitation from Egypt, and Jonathan Curiel, make the connection for us.
Well, this may not be thought of as music per se by non-Muslims, and Muslims don't consider this music, but there is definite musicality here. You hear these bending notes. You hear these dramatic shifts from major to minor scales, and these are the same qualities that you find in early blues music. And so even if you were to go on the streets of Dakar or Bamako in Mali, and you were to find, say beggars in the street, they do chants. They do begging and chants, and even that music will remind people of blues music.
Jonathan Curiel is the author of All America, Travels Through America's Arab and Islamic Roots. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
All of me, why not take all of me?
Many thanks to engineer Mike Wilkins for this Billie Holiday remix. From the Nan and Bill Harris Studios at WGBH, I'm Marco Werman. Join us again tomorrow.
Take my arms, I'll never use them. Your goodbye left me with...
The World's Global Hit podcast is brought to you by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the health of people and communities through grant-making, employee giving, and volunteerism. The Medtronic Foundation, on the web at medtronic.com.